And once again, good morning or afternoon, everyone, and welcome to EMForum.org and our last program for 2013. I am Amy Sebring and will serve as your host and moderator today, and we are very glad you could join us. For any first-timers, I think we have old-timers mostly with us today, but just in case, we will be providing some instructions as we go along so you can relax and participate with us. And we do want you to take part in this discussion. If you need any assistance, please select Help Desk from the drop-down options in the Q&A panel or the chat panel, and our associate, Lori Weber, will try to assist you. Our topic today is the National Preparedness Campaign from the Safe America Foundation, and today we will learn about their ongoing efforts and future plans. First, for any first-timers, we will be starting with an overview, and then we will proceed with your questions or comments. And we'll provide further instructions just before we begin the Q&A, but please do hold any questions or comments till that part of the program. Today's recordings and a copy of the slides will be available from our site later this afternoon, and then a transcript will be available early next week. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce Safe America founder and CEO, Len Pagano. Through Len's leadership, the Safe America Foundation has developed educational and practical safety and preparedness programs for businesses and communities, and he currently leads a staff of 18 from Safe America's suburban Atlanta headquarters, where he is joining us today. Welcome, Len, and thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. I now turn the floor over to you to start us off, please, and I will be flipping your slides, so just tell me when.
Thank you, Amy. I appreciate that, and I just want to thank you for this opportunity to share our program and to give everybody online here a chance to perhaps look at ways they might want to collaborate or partner with us in 2014. That's one of the hopeful conclusions that I would hope any of you on the phone here today will make. Now, I also want to add that my wife, Mary Lou Pagano, who's our Executive Vice President for Programs and has helped in development of this whole campaign over the last 5 years, is also here today.
Hi, Amy, and hi to everybody online.
Welcome, Mary Lou.
Thank you.
Well, as you're looking at the title slide right now, Protecting America, I think the whole idea of this program is, in fact, to do just that. And, you know, we are really committed to the idea that, you know, being prepared will keep you from being, as if you will, affected by any kind of event, whether it's a weather-related storm, active shooter, terrorist, any kind of incident. And we are focused on preparedness because we believe that mitigation is a real key to not only saving lives, but also to reducing the financial burden of an event. And we all have heard plenty of stories about how companies that aren't prepared or organizations or individuals who aren't prepared really do suffer greater both psychologically as well as financially. So this conversation today is all on how you can be prepared and how you can use our program to help get you there. And I guess, Amy, we can take the first slide now and say that one of the major events, of course, in the past year was Sandy. In the last 15 months, a lot has been written and said about Sandy. I would point out that what we learned from the events was that responding to natural disasters continues to be a challenge, and jurisdictions overlap. So when you have federal, state, and local governments all trying to work their own agendas, there's no question that we have a challenge. And I think in our conversations, we've had several meetings in New York in the past 6-7 weeks, and as we heard from different points of view, you know, there's just that reality that, you know, it's kind of sometimes like a Keystone Cops scene, you know, where people go to the same site and they find out something's already been handled. So it's important to develop some form of coordination. One leader pointed out we do not have institutional stability, and that's one of the factors that happens is that a constant change in administrations, both at a local and federal level, means that solutions aren't fully implemented. Before a new administration starts, there, you know, is always the chance that somebody comes into office or into a position of authority and they start to go in another direction. And that's one of the challenges. So it was interesting, if we go on to the next slide, Amy, we can say that, you know, there was certainly a significance about Sandy that causes it to be still looked at and will be looked at for some years to come. It was the second costliest hurricane in U.S. history, with damage estimates exceeding $68 billion. And I didn't realize that as many people were hurt or killed as I did when I was doing this research. 286 people were killed in seven counties. You can see there 24 states impacted. And if we go on to the next slide, I think the key is that Sandy is a catalyst for improving the situation. And that's what we were discussing when we had a meeting on October 29th at Bank of America with a group of leaders from the Association of Contingency Planners. In our conversation with them and other city leaders, we kind of learned what's shared on this slide. You know, we have to improve the way we communicate the threat and the risk. And what struck me was the National Hurricane Center in Miami has taken some steps to revamp how it shares critical information with the public. An example is that scientific terms are being now replaced by direct statements about the potential danger of a storm. And cities have expanded their evacuation zones. So those are two positive things that have come out of Sandy. And I think that the challenge going forward will even be broader when you look at the whole U.S., not just people on the East Coast. But the fact is we have a mindset still that national security risk or terrorism is the dominant worry. And certainly for other parts of the country other than New York, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., weather predominates their worries. So the challenge going forward is how do we incorporate a heightened sense of awareness with disasters at the same time? Looking at the next slide, we prioritize the use of money and resources, which obviously are in shorter and shorter supply. Everybody wants to fix problems, but who's going to pay for it? I think that's an ongoing issue that, you know, we're going to face into the next, you know, 5-10 years. If we go to the next slide, which talks about our work this year, we were completing year 5 of our program called Be Safe America. It was our best year ever in mobilizing Americans to do drills. In fact, this fall, Mary Lou, I think we had, what, close to 2 million people involved?
Yes, that's right.
And some of the partners were the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Association of Contingency Planners, ShakeOut, which is a large earthquake drill that has been growing to be a global drill out of California. These are three of the major partners, but we had others like the U.S. Medical Reserve Corps, IAEM, NEMA, a variety of other groups at a local level. And in 2014, what we're looking at is expanding this collaboration, feeling that there is a need for a major program to fill gaps left by other agencies. And this is why we're delighted to see today's conversation, because we want to involve as many individuals, as many companies, as many communities as possible. At our meeting in New York, Fortune 500 firms were there, like Bank of America, KPMG, the New York Stock Exchange, UPS, Walmart. All of them indicated there's a value to what Safe America is doing. And I think one of the things that struck me, because of sequestration, the federal government's FEMA division has not been able to do as much to get around the country as they had in previous years. An example is IPAWS, whose executive director, Antoine Johnson, met several times with me and had several conversations after we did some joint presentations in New York. And he said, you know, Len, I very much appreciate what Safe America is doing. This whole concept of having a single day when there can be a drill across the country is valuable. And, you know, we at IPAWS, which stands for the Integrated Public Alert Warning System, their growing charge is to make everyone aware of what your cell phone is doing when it sends off a beep that relates to an IPAWS alert. And he said, you know, really, a lot of people still don't know what's happening and what IPAWS is doing. And if you can have us piggyback on what you're doing with your Be Safe America drill season, we would love it. So our goal in 2014 is to do just that, to have our drill be part of the agenda, but also to expand the awareness of IPAWS and emergency alerts and cell phones. So I know that, Mary Lou, I think this is one of those things that, you know, the average cell phone user still probably doesn't know what an IPAWS alert sounds like. And even though they've done some work with the various groups around the country, like the Ad Council, that's produced a TV spot that has been distributed, it's still just not known. So working with IPAWS and working with ACP, we want to involve others to make sure that everybody knows, you know, that they have a role to respond and not just to let an alert go off on their phone and just kind of ignore it, which has happened and has cost lives. So this whole, you know, it's no good to have a tool and not to understand what the tool's purpose is. So this is where I think we still have work to do. And realistically, there are countries like Israel and South Korea that really understand the value of a drill. I don't know that we still get it. And to that end, if we go to the next slide, part of what we're trying to do is focus on message creation. And I think Mary Lou and I can tell you that's one of our sweet spots. Mary Lou, you want to speak to some of the work we've done this year in messaging?
Yes, sure, Lynn. One of the things that we started this Be Safe America program with, the goal of having Americans shift their thought process around emergencies. And now we're talking about individuals. And not thinking that if there's a weather disaster or other man-made kind of emergency, that there is going to be someone who is going to be there ready to come and help them, that they actually, and Len has coined the phrase, they have to be their own first responder. So with that in mind, what we have been promoting for the last 5 years is that people pledge that during National Preparedness Month, September, they will do some kind of a drill with their families, friends, neighbors, coworkers, and businesses. So we've got out there with that message, pledge to drill, then actually conduct a drill, as well as have a plan for, you know, what supplies you need in your home and that sort of thing. The original program under Be Safe America was promoting a communications tool using cell phones and asking people to text first, talk second in a disaster. And that frees up the phone lines for real emergency personnel to be able to get there, or for people having a real emergency to be able to get their calls through. Text messages, we learned through our research with Dr. Rob Duncan at the University of Missouri, we learned that over 800 four-letter texts could get through in the span of a one-minute phone call. So this Text First, Talk Second program became our banner program for Be Safe America, and we went to first spouses, governor's spouses around the country, and asked them to get behind this. So starting in 2010, the former First Lady of West Virginia, Gail Manchin, really jumped on board with this program and became a champion for it, because she said the name of the program, Text First, Talk Second, is your elevator speech. People can understand that's what we want them to do. And we went ahead and we promoted this use of a code, Are You Okay?, that should be texted to family members or coworkers with the response of I am okay or help. So you're looking at a slide here that's showing you these different messages that we've created. Be prepared, be safe, text first, talk second. We have a PSA on the importance of volunteerism, and then we have this PSA running on Walmart Checkout TV that started November the 11th and is running through the end of December. Len?
Mary Lou, let's let them see exactly these spots. So why don't we start, Amy, with the first one in the upper left-hand corner there, the Walmart Checkout TV spot.
All right. I'll bring it up.
So those that particular spot is being aired currently in 600 Walmart stores around the country. And the importance we really feel with this message is to help shift the paradigm of people being apathetic about not being prepared, you know, about being prepared for an emergency. And this is saying to them, okay, here's one quick thing that you can do.
Why don't we show them next, Amy, the spot talking about the importance of drilling. And this is a spot we produced a couple of years ago, which is one we run annually just because some people still have no awareness that a drill has a value. So that was the second spot, as I say, the second spot today, but it was the original spot we created. And now, Mary Lou, you have had a number of First Ladies record a spot. You want to speak to that one?
Yes, we have. So our First Spouses program currently has 15 governor spouses around the country that are participating to get the message out for people to text First, Talk, Second. And this is our current chairwoman, Diane Bentley of Alabama. And we'll see her PSA right now, Amy. Okay. So in each state, the spouses determine how they use these PSAs. For instance, in Alabama, in Puerto Rico, Delaware, Rhode Island, they usually have taped the PSA and released it at an important time for their state when they usually have specific weather-related emergencies that people need to hear this message to remind them how to communicate.
The next spot is the original one we had created by a group actually of communication students in San Francisco, and this is the message about why texting helps the phone system, if you will, the wireless carriers. And so this is the Text First, Talk Second television PSA. Well, as you can see from that spot, you know, it was very clever and visually being able to communicate the idea that, you know, when everybody tries to get on a wireless device at the same time, you have a problem. And reality is the wireless network was not created like the landline network. It is not an unlimited number of people that can call, you know, on any one cell tower. So this is one of those real, I think, key messages that still a lot of people don't get. And we've been in a series of meetings with groups in Washington like the FCC where we've explained these spots, and they've said to me personally, gee, Len, this is great because, you know, this is a message that just hasn't been communicated and hasn't gotten out there. So for all of you listening in today, one of the things we want to do is make you not only aware of these spots but invite you to use them. And if you need a copy or if you want to put it up on a website, we would be more than happy to help you do that. Now, the last spot is a little bit more generic. And yet we think it's very important, too, because it speaks to the need for every American to be involved, to be a volunteer. And this is a spot we produced with Delta Airlines and actually was shown on Delta's domestic flights a couple of years ago on every flight across the U.S. for about a month-long period. And this one, again, we're going to show now, speaks to the need to be involved. Well, there's a spot that's still a sweet spot for Mary Lou and I. It's something we think is important. And, again, we'd be happy for any of you that are interested as we update some of these spots and make them 2014-oriented. If you'd like a copy, let us know. Moving on to the next slide, those messages are all critical, and now we talk about our vision of where we want to go. First off, if you said, is preparedness an issue that's in everybody's mind, I think many of us would say, not really. If we're professionals, you know, we're preaching to the choir here probably today, most of us think of preparedness every day, but most Americans do not. So our vision for the Be Safe America campaign is in 2014 to ratchet up the awareness of preparedness as an issue that each individual needs to be interested in. So building that platform that makes preparedness a top five issue is our goal. We want to anchor our program in New York City with major Fortune 500 firms. We want to create a website that's rich in content and has exclusive sponsors in categories such as disasters, current disasters, and research on what can be done, and technology. New technology is being developed all the time, and some of the apps that are out there, and certainly health issues related to disasters or just health issues in general. These are some of the things that we want to put into a website that would also feature partners' information and their resources, along with NGOs and mainline media and what they could bring to the table. And if you go to the next slide, I think we may have this be in there repetitively. It looks like we'll skip over that slide. Now, that's it. The Safety News Network is our vision of how we can accomplish all of what we just talked about getting the awareness up there. And if you can, Amy, let's hit the link there to safeamerica.org and SNN. And for those of you now looking at that, you can see a site that we have begun to populate with different informational things. At the top there, the banner has different pull-down menus. For example, you see the one that says topics. I guess, Amy, I think you can hit that, and it'll pull
down. Actually, I think our attendees can do it themselves. So.
Well, so if they can do that, they can pull that menu bar down, and you can see some of the topics that we're talking about addressing, disasters, health, transportation, weather, youth, training, research. All of these are areas that usually have something to do with a major event, and certainly what we at Safe America want to do is provide, you know, in one location this kind of content. Partner news. We have a variety of partners I referred to already, like the U.S. Chamber. Imagine if all of their information were available through this central source. And then programs about Safe America, our CEO network, and Be Safe America, plus the program Mary Lou referred to as the First Spouses campaign. These are things that we want people to know more about, and being able to update on a regular basis, day to day, week to week, we think would be very helpful. And we can aggregate something that is, I think, very much a need that hasn't been addressed. A good friend, Tom Moran, up in the Baltimore area, has been running the All Hazards Consortium, and he came to me about 2 years ago saying, Len, you know, with your background, your history in broadcasting, couldn't you do something that would create like an all-news channel on events, disasters? Well, in essence, Tom's inspiration is being evidenced here today, because I think this Safety News Network, or SNN for short, will be just that. And with bloggers that you can see some of the names that we've indicated so far that we're talking to, and they have indicated an interest in being part of this. And then if you go down, you'll see as you scroll down, variety of faces there. These are some of the people, but if there are those of you on the phone today who say, you know, hey, I'd like to be a part of this. I'd like our organization to be tied in. Know that this hasn't gone live yet, so we'd love to involve those of you that are interested. You'll see the young woman there on the far left, Amanda Mason. She is our national spokesperson, and she'll be creating content so that we can tell the story of, you know, how to be safe in ways that are just as entertaining and as, I'll say, convincing as what different organizations do to sell toothpaste. So I think it's important to make this message digestible for the average person. It really has been too much professionals who have led the charge, and we've kept it in our corner as professionals. But I think it needs to be that the average person in America cares about this just like they care about the environment. If green is such a big, important issue, it didn't get there because people in the environmental field kept it to themselves. You know that? I mean, that is a critical point. So as we all look at our role, I think it's to take it to the next level of involvement by everyone. And to that end, I think the Safety News Network will help us. Mary Lou, any thoughts on this?
No, I think that's great. It would be a resource for people to go to.
And we'll look forward to any feedback any of you on the line have because we are looking to build this with a lot of people and a lot of partners. The next slide talks about the relationship that we have. I think we go to the folks at the Clinton Global Initiative, and to say that they have invited us. The woman there in the middle there is Karina Nagin in New York. Mary Lou and I met with her, along with the other gentleman who's visualized there, Jeff Bogart, to talk about what we can do to help get this agenda out across America. And one of the things, because of our interest in involving women leaders, especially the first spouses or first ladies of various states, Karina thinks that interest of female leadership, both by Bill Clinton and his wife, Hillary, will make this program one they might want to spotlight. So they have meetings coming up both in New York and in Denver in May that we are hoping to be a part of. The Denver meeting is the CGI America meeting where they outline programs they think have value for the country. Karina was very interested in having us present, so we're going to talk to our chairman-elect, Hugh Welsh, about his being there and helping represent our program. And for those of you interested in being a part of this, we're looking to put a task force together. It's going to be New York-centric, but anyone in the country can participate, so please let us know if you're interested. And to that end, the next slide talks about building a partnership, and that includes any of you listening in today. We're seeking input on 2014. We're going to have a meeting tomorrow at the UPS headquarters here in Atlanta, and the UPS Foundation, which has been a longtime partner, will be leading this conversation. And our goal is to survey others, to listen, to have conversations that help build this program to the point where it's as visible as any other major, you know, nonprofit program. A board member who some of you may know, Dennis Schrader, who used to be a major part of FEMA, and the effort there to help people plan for future disasters. Dennis and I spoke several times over the last couple of years about, you know, when you look at how the Susan B. G. Komen Foundation has grown to be such a very significant force in dealing with breast cancer. I mean, I'm always amazed in October when I get on a Delta flight and they offer pink lemonade. And they're doing this to raise funds for the Susan G. Komen Foundation. Well, now it doesn't seem like the breast awareness issue is limited to October. It's a 12-month deal. And even at Christmas this year, I've seen different groups promoting that they're going to, you know, sell products and wear pink shirts and raise money for Susan G. Komen. So when I bring up the parallel, Dennis used to say, how long did you think it took for that organization to get this kind of visibility? And we went back and did the research and found it took about 20 years. So that's a parallel for us. We're halfway there. We should be in 10 more years making this issue top of mind for everybody. And that's where Mary Lou and I are hoping that those of you listening in can be a part of helping us popularize this. Because, you know, again, building this into a partnership where everybody is involved, I think, is one of our goals. And this slide talks about utilizing upcoming meetings in 2014 of the Association of Contingency Planners, the U.S. Chamber's Business Civic Leadership Center, Operation Hope. We'll be talking to them later this afternoon. I mean, there are lots of groups, and whether it's at a private lunch or breakfast, we want to recruit new partners. We're focused on New York, Washington, and Atlanta, but we'll also be going to Chicago and looking at Dallas and Los Angeles and all sorts of other cities, Denver. So our goal in all of this is to stage a national drill in October of 2014. And we started that this year. We want to ratchet up the visibility. We're going to talk to Major League Baseball about would they partner with us. We've had meetings with them already. And just imagine if every one of 32 Major League Baseball stadiums promoted this and the texting idea. I think this is something that Mary Lou and I believe we can make happen this year, and it's really, I think, very important. And back to having women involved, women are critical to how we not only run families, but how we run communities. And I think it's critical to have more and more female leadership, and that's a message we're going to stress over the next 6 to 10 months. So as we go to the final slide here, your opportunity is to help us make this happen. And I hope that you all will want to be a part of what we call the Safe America Alliance and our CEO network. What you can do in to make this something very simple is start by recruiting others. Link to our website, link to us, and let us help sell the story. But if you have ideas and your own vision on how to build the ultimate program, know that's why we're here today. We really appreciate this opportunity, the EM Forum today, and I want to thank Amy and Evagene for making this possible. And Mary Lou, I think there's some thoughts you may want to share here just as we kind of bring this to a close.
Just the fact that with all of us working together, we can really build a culture of preparedness at a grassroots level for all Americans. So, again, I also want to thank you, Amy, for giving us this opportunity. Please do not hesitate to get in touch with either Len or myself, and we'll look at how we can partner and collaborate for the 2014 preparedness season.
And with that statement there, I guess, Amy, I guess questions perhaps from those listening in?
Very good. Thank you so much to both of you. We've got some really exciting things going on, and I get the feeling, you know, emergency management community, we have certain expertise, but disaster response and so forth, but you seem to be bringing, you know, expertise in this networking and, the campaigns and so forth. That's really a boom.
Well, thanks, Amy, for your observations and your kind words. I think, you know, again, I compare it to selling toothpaste. I mean, you know, everybody needs to be prepared, and yet we haven't gotten that message really across. I think more and more you see any event and you see people waiting for the first responder. You think that, you know, we were totally helpless, and yet most people, you know, can do a lot and don't need to be, sitting on a street corner acting like they're helpless. So I think, again, knowing the burden on first responders, part of this whole campaign is, like Mary Lou said a few minutes ago, to help people realize they can be their own first responder. And at least for 72 hours in a situation where there are serious illnesses or serious injuries or, you know, any kind of a disaster has those that really are affected and those that are just kind of on the periphery. And the people on the periphery don't need to be, you know, focused on getting the attention, and we need to teach them that. That's part of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I've often thought a slogan might be, you're on your own.
There you go. There you go.
I guess. Okay, folks, if you would like to make a comment or submit a question, as usual, please go ahead and put it in the Q&A panel, and I will moderate that and read the question out loud, and then our folks, guests can respond. We have a small but good group here today, and we'll give folks a minute to think of, you know, if they have anything they want to add in. I did want to ask you, as far as getting in contact, you have a contact us in, tab on safeamerica.org or someplace where folks can find that.
Yeah, I think that they'll find how to reach us there, but we're happy to have you hear the phone number and call us or email us at 770-973-SAFE, or email either Mary Lou or I at len.pagano@safeamerica.org. Mary Lou's similar, marylou.pagano,
right.
safeamerica.org is her email address. And, you know, for those that are in the Atlanta area, we are going to have a meeting at UPS tomorrow, and I would just say we do have a couple of open seats. If you're interested in attending and being part of our dialogue, we would welcome someone that's on the line today. And just let us know, and we can give you the logistics for the meeting tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, very good. Okay, thank you. I got a question from Mary Lou. How many first spouses do you have currently signed up, and are you looking for more?
We have 15 currently, and yes, our our goal is to involve all the first spouses. Yes, so anyone that has a close relationship with the first spouse in your state, please do let me know, and we are constantly emailing all of them. We update them regularly, even if they haven't jumped on board, by taping a PSA or issuing a press release about the Tech Source Talk Second program, which some of them do. Some issue a proclamation encouraging this kind of personal preparedness and working using the Tech First system of codes, are you okay and I am okay. The spouses all tell us that they are supportive, they're all encouraging. So the 15 are the actively involved spouses.
And we do have a link, I believe, to the First Lady program where I'm sure there's more information about that.
Yes.
And I would think NEMA, the State Directors Organization, would be helpful to you in lining up some additional ones.
Yes, you're exactly right, and we do work with the emergency managers in several of the states. They work closely with their first spouse, and so we do work with them.
Excellent. Okay, I've got a question from Ava Jean. She says, Len, I have long felt that we as a nation are not doing enough to be prepared. From your viewpoint, what would help the most to make individuals aware that they are responsible for themselves, first of all?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, this is one of those things that probably needs a good PR or advertising campaign. I think part of our challenge is to make people see this as a real need. And, you know, it's kind of like if you said that we have to get people motivated here, what's the motivation? A lot of people assume that they're not going to face a disaster next year, so why do anything? I mean, it's kind of like, you know, If I'm not going to die next year, then why worry about a funeral? I mean, you know, it's some simple logic that all of us employ. So we've got to find a way to make something of the exercise of process, the drill, valuable. Now, let us tell you why we focused on texting. A lot of people text, but then there are a lot of people who don't know how to text, and a lot of the people who don't know how to text are older people, people over 50 or 60. And it's a helpful tool. You know, it's not just a disaster tool. So in getting people to know how to text, we are helping people learn how to communicate in a new way. And it's been any number of examples where people have told us, hey, we're delighted we now know how to text. We know how to be in touch with our kids. It tends to be the younger generation that likes to text over voice calls. So now if you know how to text, you can reach your 18- or 20-year-old in their dorm room where they might not have called you, and maybe you get a response on whether or not they're coming home for Christmas. I mean, you know, these are simple things, non-emergency related. So we're trying to use texting as a tool and as a, frankly, incentive for people to be active. In doing a national texting campaign, what we're doing is saying do something real simple. If you have everybody in your family, text and text to each other at the same time. In fact, one of the things we have on our website is a free app that you can download that allows you to do multiple texts. You can have four or five family members, and you can text them all the same message at the same time. Well, imagine the value of that for human everyday occurrences, like if you're going to have a car issue of who's going to pick you up, you could send all five members of your family, let's say, and say, hey, I have a flat tire. Who's closest to Perimeter Center? Can you come pick me up? I mean, that's a practical use of a texting app that we have available for free download. And part of, again, the reason we came up with it is because it has a lot of value in everyday life. It's not just for, you know, of occasions of disasters. And another thing we haven't talked about here today that I would bring up, Avigene's question kind of prompted me to remember that we are dealing with the next generation that needs to be a part of the equation. So we're working with Boys and Girls Clubs nationally, and one of the programs that we have called Safe Tomorrows emphasizes teaching kids, you know, that they have different issues that they face. Texting can be handled in a positive way or it can be a negative way. For example, sexting, showing something that you shouldn't show on the Internet, or bullying kids, or some of the issues dealing with texting and driving. These are all negative implications. So we've focused in Safe Tomorrows on curriculum building that gets the individual to say, who's maybe anywhere from 10 to 15 years of age, to say, ah, you know what? I don't need to do these things. I need to be able to take care of myself, and I need to know what's proper, and I only do things that are safe, and this includes what I put out on the Internet. I don't go to Facebook pages and, you know, do things that are provocative and then find myself in trouble because somebody stalks me or some 42-year-old man comes after me thinking I'm, you know, really cool. So there are implications to preparedness for young people in everyday life. And I think this whole area that we get into, the knockdown game, where people are, you know, being punched and knocked out in random acts of violence, I think there are ways for us to deal with some of these things through our preparedness campaign and through making young people alert. So the awareness of how to protect yourself and being ready for any incident is very important. It has everyday implications, and tools like texting and these apps that I referenced on our website, it's valuable to everyday Americans. So I think, again, how we make preparedness more relevant is to make the value of some preparedness. It's like, what's the value of losing weight? Well, you can live longer. So preparedness, if it can translate into the same kind of situation, what's the value of preparedness? Well, in an emergency, your house withstands a hurricane. Or in an emergency situation, you all know where to rendezvous. Or if somebody's car breaks down, you know how to get some help because you can text. I mean, these are all practical things that I think grow out of preparedness, and it's something that we're trying to stress.
So to Lynn's point, reaching Avigene, the younger generation is going to help with this issue. Because if we can get them on board, they're the ones that usually have to do fire evacuation plans for a classroom project when they're in elementary school. So in having this Safe Tomorrows program, we're trying to actively engage these young people in being responsible for their own safety.
Very good. Let's see. I do have a comment from Mickey Lewandowski, who says, in my community, we are relatively disaster benign, and my experience is that the average person feels no urgency to get prepared. So engaging them in a quick and convenient text drill with practical use is a smart idea.
Great.
And on that topic, Lynn, I think you mentioned some research that was informing this. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, we worked on this with Rob Duncan from the University of Missouri, who's vice chancellor for research there. And, you know, we found out several things. First of all, you know, there's a limit to the wireless cell towers and how many phone calls they can transmit, even in a good situation on a bright, sunny day. And we wanted to help quantify this because, again, the average person has no concept of this. So we asked Rob how many four-digit text messages, something as simple as, are you okay? Are you okay? Can be transmitted in 1 minute. And he came back and said, over a digital network, you can send out 800 text messages, 800 in 1 minute. At the same time, we know that a 1 minute digital call could communicate and connect only two people, you know, one person on one end of a phone line and one on the other. So we came up with this slogan of 800 to 1, that you have an 800 better odds of being able to be connected in an emergency using a text over a single, you know, voice call. And as we did more, again, research with Rob, we found out increasingly this is an issue for first responders, that phone lines can be tied up, and in the process of being tied up, obviously, emergency signals or communications can't get through. So there's been a growing support from public safety officials to our campaign, and We're looking at doing more research because there's even more that we can find out. And one thing that's kind of a short-term emerging issue is that everyone who can text also could be texting to 911. And in terms of a lot of the communities around the country are planning to implement texting to 911 over the next 2 to 4 years. So it's going to be interesting as this becomes a common language for emergencies, for people to text and say, I'm in need of help, I had a car wreck, or, you know, somebody's just, broken into my house. If people start texting to 911 centers, and really that they've already been doing it. The problem is in many states where they don't have the equipment, the text message goes unanswered or unseen by the 911 center. But this is changing. States like New Hampshire are now equipped to handle text messaging, and so are certain communities. Durham, North Carolina is one that I went to and studied the system that was being implemented there by Verizon. And as this is beginning to be a system that all carriers, AT&T and Sprint and T-Mobile, they're all going to be able to have it so that if you text to a 911 center, once the system is set up in each community, it'll be the same as all of us learning how to dial 1 and area code and long distance. For those of you that don't know it, there was a time when that wasn't doable. But bottom line is we've all gotten accustomed to dialing internationally or domestically long distance, and that's what's going to happen with texting. It'll become a common feature to 911 call centers. So all of these things have a, you know, kind of translate into everyday life. So back to, I think, the point of, you know, those communities that are kind of benign when it comes to disasters, we all still have fire stations and we all still have emergencies. So weather-related emergencies seem to be on the uptick. So what we're talking about, I think, will have value to anybody in any weather emergency.
Okay. I do have a comment question from Michael Farinacci, who put it in the chat, but thank you, Michael, so folks won't be able to see it. He says, I think your efforts are noble considering the cuts in budgets from national to local government. In our area, I do not see a lot of movement with the CERT, which would go a long way for people taking on volunteer roles in their community and being prepared for themselves and helping others. Now to get to the question. He says, have you had any feedback from IAM and or the state agencies? Have you met with any criticism, constructive or otherwise, concerning redundancy?
We've met with IAM. In fact, they're one of our coalition partners, so we're proud to have IAM and NEMA and other groups that have been part of this whole campaign. I think that your point of redundancy, I think, is one we haven't seen. The point, we're trying to be somewhat unique. I think the idea of having a single national day when there's a national drill has been very intriguing, and I will tell you, for some of the wireless carriers, one in particular, was a little worried that their network couldn't handle the volume of text messages in one single day that they forecasted. So they went out and actually did research to see if we could shut their network down with this Be Safe America text drill. And they came back to us privately and said, guess what? We're really excited. Our network people said you can't shut our network down. Well, to me, that was an accomplishment. Because had we not suggested this idea, they never would have ever figured out that they were vulnerable or not vulnerable to a single texting day. And I think that part of what we're talking about here is that, you know, some of this is in the area of behavior, and some of it is kind of in the psychology of the issue. And this is one of those things where I think that we deal with a lot of people in advertising, public relations shops, broadcasters. I'm an ex-broadcaster. And so what we're talking about is a social engineering. It's not looking for a law. It is, back to your suggestion, Michael, of CERT. It is getting people to want to take that kind of training. Now, we're working with FEMA. We're delighted that Russ Webster in Region 1 and Jim Duncan in Region 5, and there's a host of others in Washington, D.C. that we work with at FEMA. And I think they've seen the value increasingly of what Safe America is doing, and I think we're pleased that, you know, a lot of people voluntarily say, hey, we'll get behind you. And part of what we're hoping today, all those on this call or all who see this or hear this later, we would love you to be part of our national team. And it's something that we do need more funding for. So if you say, hey, I haven't given money yet this holiday season and you would like to make a tax-deductible donation or you know somebody who can, This is something that we would also welcome. And again, we need people, we need money, and we need energy. So if you got any of those, we're loving to have you involved.
Speaking of psychology, I'll put one in here from Isabel. She says, I'm gathering you are changing the way we are using communications in an emergency. I was taught not to use the phones, but now this seems to be confusing. Use the phone, not use the phone.
We said don't use the phone.
Yeah, I think that the premise, though, of using the phone for texting, though, is a good point that we can speak to for a moment. First of all, what we're dealing with is probably the most important thing other than surviving a disaster. You know, that's job one, right? Surviving. Job two is to talk to somebody, to reconnect. And that starts with your employer. It starts with your family. It starts with your neighbors. And the only way to do most of that is to either pick up the phone or pick up something, you know. And, again, the idea of using a text is to keep the number of actual interactions or communications at their highest level. So that, you know, we can all text at the same time is more doable than all of us pick up the phone and use our wireless device at the same time. You know, a lot of households no longer have a landline. We happen to be one of those that don't. So even though Mary Lou would love to have a landline again, I said, you know, it's redundant. We don't really need it. We've got six cell phones in our family because we have six people. We have four adult children, and most of them still live in our immediate area. So when we want to get in touch with our kids, we either text or use our cell phone. Well, in an emergency, being able to teach them up front a four-digit code, and remember how the movie Titanic was talking about SOS and using the Morse code. A lot of people that weren't around in the 60s to see the original movie Titanic or to even care about the history of Morse code might not know that SOS, which we all think of as, you know, a emergency call or a term that's shorthand for an emergency, came from Titanic, save our ship. Well, what we're trying to do is develop a new Morse code, and this is what we call our safety shorthand. And the four digits, are you okay, can be responded to, I am okay, or help. So that's a real simple four-digit code that you could practice any day of the week or any month of the year. But to do this in October or September, which is traditionally, of course, preparedness month, well, this would be a great thing if millions of people did this in a stadium. Now, let's talk about stadium safety for a moment. Sports stadiums are one of the more vulnerable environments we all have that we all recognize from films could become targets in the future. There's a major sports group that we work with, NCS4, that's worried about stadium safety. And most of the security forces that are employed all use texting to communicate in stadiums. They don't pick up the phone and talk to each other. They text. So I'm bringing this up because doing texting drills like the one we did at the University of West Virginia in the Marshall-West Virginia football game two and a half years ago, it was a great example of what should happen, which is hundreds of people can text at the same time in a stadium, and those are going to be connected. Thousands could, actually. So what we are looking at here in this whole idea of getting people to know when to text and when not to is pretty important. We work in transportation safety as well, so we actually have a campaign that we have against texting and driving, and we put these two elements together into a brochure called Texticate. And the Texticate idea is there are times to text and times not to. But back to any emergency, if you're going to be in an emergency, you do want to know how to get back in touch with somebody else. And as has been proven in a number of the emergencies in the last 5 years, if you put a text in, even if it doesn't get communicated right away, it probably will stay in the queue and get delivered. People down in Haiti found that to be true, in New Orleans, and after 9/11. I mean, every one of the stories, Joplin, Missouri, what happened out there, people found that a text message will be delivered even when you can't make a phone call or can't get connected with a wireless device. So, again, all of this points to, I think, there are certain needs that people still want to communicate, and if we get people used to texting, at least they'll have the satisfaction of knowing the person at the other end is safe and responding if they respond with a text.
On that topic, I'm going to take one last one here from Kayline Barnhart, and she asks, is there any guidance on how to construct a reply if you are not okay? Responding by texting help is just a start. Just wondering if your experts have given that aspect any recommendations.
So on our website, there is a Tech First, Talk Second FAQs, and what we say is if someone has texted you help, that what you should do is contact the State Patrol closest to them. So trying to get law enforcement involved closest to the location of the person in the need of help. That is currently what our advice is.
And one other thing, I mentioned the app that was developed by a Motorola engineer that's available free on our website. I would encourage you to download it because I think it has a feature that also gives the GPS location of where people are that you want to be connected to. And I think there's an upgrade for $1.99 that allows you to be able to see them in real time or if they're moving. I think part of what we need to do is take advantage of these kinds of apps so that, A, if somebody is, and this is increasingly going to be the case, where if you are in an emergency and you say help, you won't have to say too much because your GPS coordinates can be shared with public safety. And we've been in conversations and have talked to wireless carriers and manufacturers, and I think increasingly this is going to be the case that a person who needs help won't have to say too much. But for the moment, I think, again, take a look at that app that's on our website on a homepage, and I'm forgetting where it exactly is. I think it's a pull-down bar that you can get this and load it in maybe 5 minutes or less. And we found it to be very helpful. It's free. And if we can get more and more people to look at, apps today, there's so many good ones out there. We're trying to promote some, and we're looking at one right now that will help people dealing with an active shooter situation to protect yourself in those situations. An app can be also useful. So bottom line in all this is take advantage of the tools that are out there. We at Safe America are going to try over the next year to be an information channel so you'll be able to learn more through us. If you want to be a part of our extended family, we certainly would love to have any of you that are listening in be part of either our Safe America membership or be part of a task force. And for that reason, let us know if you want to be involved.
Let me ask you one last quick question. Len, when do you anticipate Safety News Network, was that the name of it, SNN, will be launched? Do you have a launch date?
We're trying to finalize it now. To be honest with you, probably sometime, this will be a real vague answer, sometime in the first 6 months.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying that with a little bit of a meaning to be a little comical here. We are trying to put together some resources. We're talking to some organizations right now that may be able to add content. We'd like to have it up by before April, just to give you a little more specificity. It's really, in certain ways, ready to go live, and we could start January, but we may wait just a little longer to get a few bells and whistles in place. But any of you interested in it, again, we would love to have, in fact, we're looking at how we can use people as, I'll call it, stringer reporters. I think professionals who know a lot about the topic we're dealing with here today could be involved in communicating or sharing information, and certainly it's just like CNN has gotten people used to the idea of sending information in, so we're going to be looking at how to incent people to be our eyes and ears for SNN.
Excellent. I was just going to wrap up by encouraging folks to, if they have good ideas and would like to contribute, to get in touch with you.
Yeah, we sure would welcome that, Amy.
All right. Let's go ahead and wrap it up for today. And on behalf of Ava Jean and myself and all our participants, thank you very much, Len and Mary Lou, for being with us today and sharing the information with us. We wish you every success as you move forward with your efforts.
Thanks so much. And Ava Jean, thank you for helping make this possible.
Thank you, Amy and Ava Jean.
And folks, before you run off, please give us take time to do a little feedback. I do want to thank everyone for participating today and extend our very best wishes to you and yours for a safe and happy holiday season. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we'll see you next year. Thank you, everyone. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.